are listening to People, Pets, and Vets with registered veterinary technician Angel Martin. And typically, Dr. Brad Miller joins me on the show here. But Dr. Miller and his family are out of town this week in Belize. We'll talk a little bit more about that later in the podcast. But each week on People, Pets, and Vets, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry. We try to share our thoughts and our perspectives on them and how they impact us in our animal hospitals. We also try to give you guys an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. Today's episode is number 114, and it's being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. As Dr. Miller typically addresses, we are broadcasting from beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia. As he typically does, I'll go ahead and give you a brief weather update. This weekend has been quite beautiful here. It's warm in the low to mid 80s and pretty sunny. Starting today, we are headed for some rain and likely here and there all week. Nothing at all, kind of like what the folks back in Michigan, where Lance and I are from, are experiencing right now. They have had some flooding going on there, which their governor has issued a state of emergency for, and they are certainly seeking some federal help there as well. But it has left abandoned vehicles in the freeways, homes and businesses that are truly flooded without power, and then people are without phone service. It's pretty devastating what's going on there, but it certainly kind of makes me also wonder and consider like what's happening to their wildlife. One of the weird things about Michigan or Warren, where Lance's family is from, is that they have black squirrels, where the squirrels here in, I guess, our part of Northeast Atlanta, Georgia, we see brown squirrels, right? They're like kind of a dirty brown looking color, but up there they have black squirrels, and they actually do have some white squirrels as well. Definitely don't know that much about my squirrel species, but an interesting fact nonetheless. So let's talk about Dr. Miller and his family. So they are taking a trip to Belize. Belize is a Central American country, bordered by an ocean on one side and a jungle on the other. I don't know that I have any interest really in ever seeing Belize, but I'm certainly interested in hearing how his trip with his family went. I'm curious to see what sort of animals they might have come across, if they saw anything super interesting. I don't know if it's something that they would do as a family, but I know it's something that they'd certainly, I guess, invest in their yards, birding. So Dr. Miller and his family definitely love to feed the wildlife in their backyard. And so I don't know if birding in Belize is something that they'll be doing, but I do know that toucans are somewhat indigenous to that area. So I'm super interested to see if they saw anything like that. And then there's also some like sanctuaries for their wildlife. I know there's a huge jaguar nature reserve. Interested to see if maybe they visited something like that. It would be very cool to hear some pretty cool stories from their trip down there. On to some other news here in the veterinary world. The CDC has temporarily suspended the importation of dogs to the United States from over 100 countries. Interestingly enough, Belize is one of these 100 countries, actually 113 countries. They also will include places from Africa, lots of different countries in that continent, the Americas and the Caribbean as well, so like Peru, Colombia, the Dominican Republic, Guatemala, all of those places, over in Asia, the Middle East and Eastern Europe, so Russia, Vietnam, Yemen, Georgia, Cambodia, Afghanistan, all of those places are on the list as well. This comes from what is being reported as an increase in fraudulent rabies vaccination papers. Super interesting. There is an article that we typically kind of refer from AHA. Tony McReynolds is the author typically in those. And he says here that canine rabies was practically eliminated in the U.S. dog population in 2007. Based on the strict vaccination policies that we had and I guess how significant rabies is, right? So again, there's a stat here that says over 55,000 human deaths each year occur due to rabies, mostly in Asia and Africa, but certainly can happen anywhere. It's one of those things that in the veterinary practice we think about, but we're pretty fortunate that it's not always a threat or not typically a threat. But it's certainly something that we guard ourselves for. Majority of our staff, veterinarians and technicians, are actually rabies vaccinated themselves and get their rabies titers checked. But we also do have many staff members in the practice that are not vaccinated, and therefore, obviously, we have a greater concern when they're handling wild animals or, in this case, even domestic animals with fraudulent rabies vaccine certificates. But I do think that a lot of this came from the pandemic, right? Because the increase in dogs' interest or people owning dogs or pets in general, but dogs specifically, had increased during the pandemic. And so I think there was an estimated raise of 6% in imported dogs. And so when that happens, obviously these people are trying to get the dogs back over here as quick as they possibly can, and they're not necessarily following all of the guidelines appropriately. And so, let's see, it says here that the suspension is meant to protect the health and safety of imported dogs by preventing importation of dogs inadequately vaccinated against rabies, and will protect the public's health against the reintroduction of dog rabies. It certainly beats the alternative, right? And that's being, I guess, infected with the rabies disease. Article published a few days ago in the AHA publications. Tony McReynolds, thank you once again. Starting, I guess, July 14th, 2021 is when we're going to start to see this suspension. According to the CDC website, it's necessary to ensure the health and safety of dogs imported into the United States and protect the public's health against the reintroduction of the canine rabies variant, or dog rabies, into the United States. The article continues on, and it basically says that we saw a huge spike in the number of imported dogs into the US, mostly with fraudulent rabies vaccine certificates, because they were trying to meet the adoption demand during the pandemic. We saw here in our practices tons of people add new pets, new dogs to their families. I think there are statistics in all of the veterinary journals and that kind of thing that there were millions of dogs added to the homes in America. The CDC is estimating that basically 6% of all dogs imported to the US arrive from countries at high risk for canine rabies. The CDC also mentions here in the article that the importation of even one rabid dog could result in transmission to humans, pets, and wildlife, essentially. The CDC noted that this is going to help protect the health and safety of all the dogs, obviously, and then the people in the area as well. There is a veterinarian, Lori Larson, who is quoted here and says that she is super happy or very glad that the CDC is taking action on this. Fraudulent certification is a serious problem that needs to be addressed, and this seems to be a reasonable approach, according to her. The article written by Tony McReynolds and published at aha.org a few days ago basically states that this ban is going to start July 14th, 2021. And as mentioned, it's going to include the importation from these 113 countries. According to the CDC website, the temporary import ban is necessary to ensure the health and safety of dogs imported into the United States and to protect the public's health against the reintroduction of canine rabies variant or canine rabies virus variant. According to the article here, and obviously some stats, canine rabies was eliminated in the United States dog population back in 2007, basically thanks to a strict vaccination policy. But still, canine rabies remains a significant threat to other parts of the world. According to the World Health Organization, rabies causes an estimated 55,000 human deaths each year. Most of these are in Asia and Africa, but still 55,000 deaths for something that is preventable with a vaccination. The article also basically mentions that we saw this spike in number here because a lot of these rescue groups were trying to meet adoption demand during the pandemic. The CDC estimated that 6% of all dogs imported to the United States arrive from countries at high risks for dog rabies. There is, I guess, a veterinarian. Let's see, where does she work? She is the director of the Companion Animal Vaccine and Immunodiagnostic Service Laboratory at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Whew, that was a mouthful, and a full sentence in your email signature, I'm sure. But she, Dr. Lori Larson, mentions that she's very glad that the CDC is taking this action. She said that the fraudulent certification is a serious problem that needs to be addressed, and this seems to be like a reasonable approach. She said it certainly beats the alternative, and that would be contact tracing of rabid dogs who slip through the net under false papers. There is also a mention here of a case back in 2015 where a dog was imported into New Jersey, a stray dog imported from Egypt. Under falsified rabies paperwork, began showing signs of rabies within days of reaching the United States, triggered a 6-month quarantine, and four other dogs who came over with her. So, triggered a 6-month quarantine for those four other dogs. This dog specifically was euthanized. 30 people were evaluated for possible rabies exposure, which none of them developed the disease. But as we all know, with COVID-19, contact tracing is pretty difficult. It's not an easy task by any means for our public health departments and any business, even when we were very much into that back early last year. But yeah, contact tracing for a dog like this means like any person like from the airline, any person at any sort of rescue group or adoption event, veterinary practice, all of these people have to be contacted, and then monitored for the possible signs of exposure to rabies vaccine or rabies disease. That's just insane. So, yeah, I think their ban is a pretty reasonable approach as well. Certainly, Dr. Larson here doesn't feel like it will affect the individual veterinarians or animal hospitals. She doesn't think that we're going to be super impacted by this, but more so that the shelters and rescue organizations that are typically bringing these dogs in or helping the funding of these dogs kind of coming over on planes and that are going to be a little bit more affected. We do work pretty heavily with a rescue group in our area, and we do see some imported pets as well. We've hopefully never seen imported pets with falsified documentation. I don't know if that really falls on the person transporting the pets, like the group that's involved in getting them here, or if it's the group that's involved in getting them out of that current country. Kind of crazy. Kind of crazy for sure. Let's talk about some other topics then. So, TikTok. TikTok has been a thing for some time now. I have not really fallen into the ways of TikTok because I don't really get involved in social media that much, as you guys all know from listening to the podcast. I certainly do like read Facebook. I see things on Instagram and that kind of thing, but I'm certainly not a poster by any means. But more and more every day in things that I'm reading or in forums that I'm involved in with other veterinary communities and other veterinary professionals, more and more people are asking if people feel like it's worthwhile for the clinic or for someone within the clinic to have a TikTok because things essentially go viral on TikTok pretty quickly. So I am not ashamed to admit that I fell down the rabbit hole of TikTok a few nights ago, and I started watching some technicians in their practices that have TikToks and some of the videos that go viral. Some of the silliest things, right? Like lubricating a cat's eye when the cat is sedated. I think hopefully it can be used for education, right? So like there's a purpose in why we do that. This video was kind of more of like just the act of doing it, more so than the education behind it. But there are some other things that I kind of saw on TikTok as well. Of course, there's like the goofy dance videos. There's all these like I don't know, challenges, if you will, that kind of go viral. But I came across a guy who was using his TikTok, I guess, channel, account, whatever you want to call it, for good, in my opinion. He is trying to advocate for animal health and well-being. He pulled some videos. Obviously, he was being discreet about the names of the people that were doing this, but he pulled some videos of like wild and exotic animals and how we personify them and we do these things to them, like tickling a slow loris, which is, I guess, some sort of marsupial animal. And people are inferring or interpreting that it's actually smiling and giggling and laughing. But according to people who know a little bit more about these animals, they're actually somewhat being tortured. They don't really like that behavior. Their facial expressions are not human facial expressions. It just is being interpreted that way. And so I thought his channel was actually really informative, and it somewhat agitated me as well to know that like these things are out here, and that people are doing this, which, I mean, I guess knowledge is power, right? But people are doing this without knowing any better. But so I chose a word of the week as anthropomorphism. And so I printed some things from Psychology Today, which is an online reference. So psychologytoday.com. Anthropomorphism is the attribution of human characteristics or behavior to non-human entities, including animals. It does say here that some people are more inclined to anthropomorphize than others, but it's a common way of perceiving and interacting with the world. Makes it seem a little bit more normal, except for when we do it and we do or don't know better and we continue to do it, if that makes sense. So anthropomorphism, in which someone sees human-like attributes in a non-human, is often associated with the bonds between humans and their beloved pets or possessions, or the way we interpret animal behavior. It says here that people can anthropomorphize in imagining that unseen beings, as gods and things like that, also possess human features. There are some examples here, and it says when a child earnestly talks to a dog or a teddy bear and expects to be understood, they are then anthropomorphizing, imagining that the companion possesses human-like perceptive abilities. It can be more subtle, so it says like when a pet owner infers a deliberate or human-like motive. So I hear it actually here in the practice, like, oh, my dog knew I was mad at it, so it went and urinated on the floor. I don't necessarily know that dogs interpret things like that. I don't know that it's a deliberate human-like motive, as it says here, but definitely we do that. I have also been victim of that, or I guess are guilty of doing that to my pets. Like if you were to raise your voice at them or whatever, if they did something wrong, the way that they react to you, you then anthropomorphize how they're feeling about it. It says also, like, what do people here in this psychology article, what do people anthropomorphize besides animals? And let's see, it says myths, Beauty and the Beast is an example of that. Everyday life, people anthropomorphize cars, computers, other machines, and of course, robots are mentioned here as being very easy to anthropomorphize. What it says why here, so let's read into this a little bit. It says attributing human intent to non-human animals, spirits, robots, or other entities, real or imagined, is one way that people make sense of behaviors and events that they encounter. So absolutely, that is exactly what's happening, I think, right? So if your dog cowers, then of course you're making a connection there. You are inferring their thoughts and behavior there after that. It says here that humans are social species with a brain that evolved too quickly to process social information. I think that's exactly what's going on, is that people are just trying to make sense of what they're seeing. But I think what we fail to realize is that they aren't human, and that when they are smiling or when their eyes are bigger or brighter, it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing as a human smiling or having big bright eyes. So I think that's a lesson that we can all kind of take away from that. It says here also in this Psychology Today article, there's a question posed. It says that can anthropomorphism cause misunderstandings? The simple answer is yes. Non-human animals share many mental faculties with humans, but the tendency to read animals based on human ways of thinking and behaving could lead to people to exaggerate the similarities and misunderstand the meaning of animal behavior, or even project their own personality characteristics onto animals. That's deep. That is very, very true, very, very real, in the sense that I think it happens, every day, even with people in their own homes and their own pets. But I commend the guy that is out there on TikTok trying to use his channel or his wavelength to the greater good, or to use it for the greater good. I am pretty much done today. Without Dr. Miller being here and kind of bantering back and forth and filling in, I am going to cut this show short. Shut the co short. No, cut the show short. So I want you guys to follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. We are also pretty going to have a pretty heavy campaign on our Facebook page, trying to involve a little bit more of our staff. I've talked to Rhonda, our marketing person, about that, and we're gonna try to do like a then and now. So like people with their pets when they were babies, and then people with their pets now. So for some people it might be 1 year later, for some people it might be 13 or 14 years later. So I think it'll be interesting to see some of our staff in their younger days, as well as their pets in their younger days. And so maybe we'll get to know a little bit more about their pets as well. But in order to see all of that, that is going to be on the clinic Facebook pages. So follow us on our Facebook. But then again, please do follow this podcast on our Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Since Facebook and Instagram are somewhat linked now, we can try to cross-post as much as possible. But I guess follow everything in order to make sure that you're not missing out on anything. But check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. You can listen to this podcast directly from our website under the Resources tab. No matter where you're getting this, please hit download and subscribe. We are definitely going to try to grow our podcast over the next year or so. And so we need as many subscriptions and followers as possible. So please do tell your friends. As mentioned before, please send in emails or questions if you would like to hear anything specific on this podcast. We definitely do appreciate it. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.